Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
All right. It may be week zero. It's not week three yet. But apparently the Ole Miss-LSU rivalry never sleeps. Walker Jones, who is the director of the Grove Collective, that is Ole Miss's NIL collective, sat down with the gentleman of the Assorted Crackers podcast. And this is a clip from that podcast that has caught a little bit of attention.
Championship, which we were a minute away from playing for it, and then rebuilding it. And so a lot of sleepless nights. As a matter of fact, I spent several nights sleeping at the Manning Center, and we worked 24/7 to keep our roster and to keep the program going. And what people don't realize, too, is half the staff was going to LSU.
Right.
So we literally had to have two different text threads, two different staff meetings. We had to ask coaches to leave the room. We had to no hall room conversations, nothing written down, nothing written on the grease boards in the office, because half the staff was literally we were going to be competing against.
It's like espionage spy games.
Well, and we actually had the FBI come through and walk the building for bugs and for everything.
Because, really?
Yeah, we knew kind of what was in Baton Rouge. And
wow.
We knew how they operated. So literally, I remember getting on my knees and looking underneath the desk, like checking for, like, is there some sort of bug in my office? Somebody was like, what are you doing? I'm like, you just trust me. You don't know this guy like I do.
Yeah. So.
All right, boys. Fair or foul? I mean, I guess to a certain degree, like, you got to protect yourself in your operation. I'm also willing to kind of contextually, that was a very emotional time. They were very worried about tampering.
I mean, better safe than sorry, right? I mean, we've got.
I think there's kind of a weird, like, do I really think that he would bug the office?
You don't know him like they do.
But if you told me it was a concern, I think you're right, Kevin. Better safe than sorry.
So the guy talking was Walker Jones. He co-founded the Grove Collective. So
correct.
So he's down there on campus, and we've got Lane Kiffin is left, and so then he's talking kind of about around the time he left, right? So he's gone, but some of his coaches that are leaving are still there. I mean, that's
got to be. And they were trying to keep some, like some that even had gone to LSU. They were trying to either negotiate to bring them back, or they were trying, like with Charlie Weiss, I think they made him a very significant offer to make him the long-term offensive coordinator.
And so there had to be lots of awkward anxiety because you didn't know who to trust. They were the people that you were actually talking to, honestly. And so it goes to the next level. Like, not only the people in front of you, you don't know if they are working now for the ops, if they're really a Kiffin guy or an Ole Miss guy. So you're trying to figure all that. While on top of it, he's saying they were concerned that part of that the office could have been bugged. Why would Lane Kiffin want to or go to those means? What would be? Because if you get caught doing it, that seems like that would be.
So the.
Was there no evidence?
I think what you would say is. So Lane leaves, Pete takes over the office.
Yes.
Pete was obviously going to have conversations with players that were currently on the team about potentially staying.
Well,
so therefore you would.
I mean, you have Trinidad. They wanted to take Trinidad, you know, right? Lacey wanted. They wanted everybody they could get.
Well, I think the reason why you would be, you wouldn't want Lane Kiffin hearing exactly what the conversations were.
You would not want that, but why would Lane want to be hearing those?
Because you can find out how much money.
The risk getting caught that you bug the office.
Well, you could hear what the offer would be, what the pitch would be, and you could theoretically combat the message.
Well, is the risk and reward balance there for Lane Kiffin? That's why I don't think he would. Like, could he, the risk of doing that and getting caught versus the reward of doing that and getting just a tad bit of information. Like, you're either going to get these guys or you're not, whether you have inside information or not. You have, he had already had enough inside information being their coach.
I think the other possibility is, I think this might have been what Walker was hinting at. You tell me, George, if you agree. I wonder if the concern is Kiffin having conversations with Pete Golding, an aggressive recruiter, and wondering if you could get evidence of tampering and keep that in your back pocket. It's like a blackmail type thing.
Oh, I could totally see that. I mean,
I think they're less worried about the conversations about negotiations and more worried about that.
I mean, with what we've already found out now about some of Golding's tactics, if you will, when it comes to recruiting,
well, and
that
I mean,
could certainly.
And the Ole Miss side of things has always said, well, you don't know what LSU is doing.
Well, I mean, if you're Ole Miss, you do not. Nobody wants anywhere that they're at being bugged, right? So I understand, like, no matter what it is, it can be anywhere.
But I think the primary question is, how realistic? How realistic would it be to believe that Lane Kiffin was bugging his previous office?
I could see the paranoia setting in because it's such an unusual situation, to the point that there's the Lane Kiffin rule in the Senate bill, right? Like, there is this, like, you're going to the playoffs. You are achieving what you have set out to achieve, and your coach is leaving, which happens all the time. And when they leave, they take people with them. But the season was still in progress. And the recruit, you know, of, and this current landscape of college football,
you were trying to retain
with the NIL,
some of
trying to retain people, and it involves money and negotiations. Like, there's a, the paranoia was there. I could see more than just this Walker Jones, who's in charge of the Grove Collective, who was on this Assorted Crackers podcast, which, you know, is it an all Ole Miss podcast or?
So here's the
here they actually talk about snacks.
Here is the blurb from their YouTube or from their Apple podcast page. Life gets better when we make room for things that keep our flame lit. We're three guys in the second half of life exploring passions, pursuits, and everyday escapes that recharge our batteries and restore our spirits. Talking to listeners of any age who want to live with more intention and enjoyment. Bourbon, college football, hunting, fishing, 80s culture, other random escapes. Interviews from the show have been cited by national media outlets and featured in other major news aggregators. You can follow us on Instagram at 3AssortedCrackers, YouTube, 3AssortedCrackers, and email the show at 3AssortedCrackers@gmail.com. So I do not think that it is specifically...
Not sports? Is it Ole Miss? Is it based in Mississippi, or is it...
It seemed like they definitely had a relationship with Walker Jones.
Yeah. A clever name. I mean, that's you know, my favorite part of a trivia night is best team name, and you can come up with a clever name. A clever name for a podcast for especially these guys. But somehow, I mean, have they – we're learning about them. We'll do a deeper dive into their history and who, what other guests they have had on here. But the important thing is that Walker Jones was on about going into the weekend, I guess. He was on the podcast that dropped, and now – as people listen, it's making headlines over there on ESPN. The headline, of course, Ole Miss had FBI sweep for bugs after Lane Kiffin's exit for LSU. So we could see the reason why Ole Miss could be paranoid. You're giving me some reasons. I still don't buy why Lane Kiffin would actually do it. But then
I'm kind of in the same boat. But I mean, I do know that
Ole
Miss decision makers, by the end, the Kiffin relationship was extremely...
Anything was possible. And I'm not...
There was a lack of trust.
I do not at all question the decision to check for it, right? I think the paranoia, like, if it just eases your concerns, do it, right? Like,
yeah,
sometimes you got to do something just
to,
like,
just see where
take
you,
a breath and not be concerned about it.
Even if you don't think it, I can sit there and go... we got the people here. Can you just check?
But they got the FBI involved. So that's like this. And that's not just like they got, you know, the IT students or something from campus to come.
I mean,
check.
I presume they were off duty.
But they got the FBI? You said we actually had the FBI come through and walk the building for bugs, I mean, and for everything.
If you're going to do that, don't you have to have, like, proper cause of suspicion? I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. How does the FBI just, like, I think this area is bugged?
I took it more as, like, hey, we know some guys that are in the FBI. Could they come and
so they had do some, a like, quick once
off
over.
Duty right. FBI yeah. guys?
Yeah, that's kind of how I took it, but that was an interpretation. That was clearly not stated.
We don't know. There was not a follow-up by the assorted crackers.
On or if that, there was, there was not in that clip.
Not in that clip.
Right.
Well, we got to listen. We have not had time to listen to the entirety of it. We're looking at quotes and seeing some of these shortened. What I said, we knew kind of what was in Baton Rouge, and we knew how they operated. So is he implying that they operate by bugging in other situations? I remember getting on my knees.
The reason why I was saying I think they were worried about.
Does this make you think Lane Kiffin has bugged some place before?
No, what I think.
Tennessee might believe that.
What I think the implication there is Lane had a habit of going, I know what you do. And I think the idea would be, let's not
actually give him ammunition.
Correct. Because the other side was doing the same thing of we know what you do too.
Right.
And I think that all kind of comes back to like tampering type allegations. And I mean, I do know a huge concern was having assistants that they knew were likely going to be LSU coaches recruiting the roster during the playoff run.
Which right. is, it makes it more impressive what Ole Miss was able to do last year when you really think about.
Well, that's the other thing that is also interesting now about college football is a lot of times, like, player loyalty, like, the defense was very loyal to Pete Golding. The right. offense had more loyalty to Kiffin and to those guys, but it did get to a point where one of kind of the rallying cries was like, F him. Mm-hmm. And that kind of spewed over to both sides of the ball.
Right.
But it was primarily more the defensive side of the ball.
Sure. But they, so I say they, what's looking at some of his quotes. I mean, it makes sense that there was different text threads, right? You had your group yeah. of a text thread with the current coaches that are, you
especially
know, are going to be
there. Especially
if
you're doing negotiations and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, hey, like.
And having different staff meetings. All that stuff was logical stuff.
Like, yeah, you didn't know, because you're also
doing.
It made
it harder, though. It does make it harder. And again, that goes back to, it was impressive that your coaching staff, that you kind of had, some of them were like 1 foot out the door, but also like you had the other ones that were not 1 foot out the door have this level of paranoia. And because you're also scrambling, right?
Yep.
So you're scrambling, you got the paranoia, plus you're, when really in this situation, you should all be focused just straight up on the games that are coming up. That should be it. But you're scrambling and you're paranoid.
Well, and you're trying to sign and retain players because they have to do that in December.
But there's also more incentive now for them to leave.
Correct.
That you're fighting against.
Well, and I think LSU is offering a lot of money.
Yes. So September 19th, for those who have not circled your calendar already, the Rebels, currently ranked number 9, hosting the LSU Tigers, currently ranked number 11, hosting them at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium right down the road, one of the biggest games in college football happening right here in the Memphis area on ABC, 6:30 local time as the kickoff on the 19th.
Related, not exactly an aside. This is definitely related to this. This is from Ross Dellinger as of 2:30.
Okay. Right,
so just a handful of minutes ago.
Yes.
I don't know if we covered this at all, but I guess this had been scheduled for weeks. But SEC presidents and ADs will convene in Birmingham on Tuesday, so tomorrow,
yep.
for a 2-day meeting centering on an exploration into a conference-only governance model. The focus for now is on self-governance, not a competitive breakaway, but where this gets interesting. Already seen as an unusual gathering, the meeting now takes on more significance as SEC leaders meet at a time of unrest. They must grapple with the eligibility situation, where LSU may be violating the league's intra-conference transfer rule and NCAA policy banning pro players, which that's a fun note earlier with Daquan Wright specifically. He was actually signed to a contract.
Correct.
With guaranteed money on the table for that. The only reason he was with Cleveland is because he was waived by the Eagles and the Cleveland picked up his contract.
Correct.
So that kind of ties in there. The meeting's original intent focuses on the move to create conference-only rules and enforcement, which we have seen plenty of times across, you know, other leagues going on right now, transfers, eligibility cap, etc., as a way to avoid legal challenges. For now, most view this as a governance breakaway and not a move to compete only against its own members. It's not clear, but unlikely, that substantial decisions will be made. The meeting is expected to feature presentations and serious discussion on both the continued effort to pass federal legislation and self-governance.
So I think the first question will be, is they're going to try to figure out, I assume they're going to take the pulse of, should, you know, I think this is the interesting question. Let's say 15 schools vote to adhere to the policy and one doesn't. What happens if the one school that doesn't says we're going to continue the legal battle? Because we did kind of see, it's a little bit different, but we kind of saw this with the Big 12. Now, obviously,
yep,
the leverage situation is a little different. The Big 12 and Brett Yormark are in a tough spot with Texas Tech because Texas Tech is their best opportunity at having a national contender. So you're having to make it seem like you're appeasing the rest of your league when you also know in reality the better Texas Tech is, the better it is for you. With the SEC, you clearly, LSU's a massive brand. Now, what is the threat? I mean, LSU's probably not picking up a Big Ten invite. So, right, like, when you're trying to weigh it out in terms of the right leverage of the situation, but then you come to this point of what is worth fighting, because I think Kentucky is going to have at least one basketball player.
That played in the G League?
Not in the G League, but would. So not playing in the G League, but one player that is only has eligibility through a court decision.
Right, 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 right.
Now, I don't believe the guy from Missouri went and played pro.
Not to my recollection. And we are talking about players that, see, this is still where it gets tricky. When we talk about professional contracts,
correct,
we are talking about professional American.
It does seem like what we're actually concerned with is domestic contracts,
correct,
domestic professional leagues.
Not talking about, which the James Nagy situation was a little different because he actually got drafted in the NBA, but he never played in the G League, never signed an NBA contract.
Correct.
He immediately went and played overseas.
Correct. He did play professionally, but not domestically.
Correct. So I think even to that, like with whatever they end up discussing and coming down with, if anything, which from what Ross is saying, for this week, probably not a whole lot. Maybe just some general statements that come out of it. I think wording, phrasing, and like how it's actually going to be implemented within the league is going to be really, really important.
Well, and then you also run into the bigger picture, which is the more policy we set, the more we could wind up being at a competitive disadvantage.
Right.
Because while the Big Ten's not partaking, if the Big Ten doesn't have this policy, where you're going to get schools sit there and go, well, if we're not going to take them and they'll go to the Big Ten, then all of a sudden, why are we putting ourselves at a disadvantage?
Right.
So if you're Kiffin, do you bug the room or not for these meetings in Birmingham? That's the question.
Do you even have to bug the room?
I was going
to
say, I feel like his AD or president is going to be in the room, so he can just put his phone on the table. Back. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even think you need to ask him to wear a wire.
No, just set your phone on the table and
right, just
gonna record it that going, way.
Yeah.
Correct. But, like, one thing that I do think is, so far, the SEC has had some policy that could theoretically put them at a disadvantage. So, for instance, use the example of, remember when Nico leaves Tennessee?
Yes.
Where Team Nico really screwed up was by waiting till the point they did. They thought they were going to use the shortened timeline as a motivational force to give them leverage to have Tennessee pay up. But what they really screwed themselves by, it was outside of the time allotted window that allowed you to transfer to another SEC school. You are, if you do it within the right time window, you can go from Alabama to LSU, right. LSU to Ole Miss, Georgia to South Carolina, you can do all that. But Nico waited until that window had expired, and so he didn't have...
There was no leverage of another SEC team getting involved.
Correct.
It was essentially Tennessee bidding against themselves, and they weren't going to do that.
And no SEC team jumped in. Now, you could make the argument maybe that's some type of indictment on Nico. Maybe like, but
we've seen UCLA, there
were,
man.
Well, there were other teams that were quarterback needy enough that I think would have taken the shot.
Yeah.
And that policy did keep them from doing it. And no one challenged it. Now the question becomes, if you're at the point, like, is this a pure apples-to-apples comparison? Because where it is a pure comparison is it was a policy that existed in the league, but not in other leagues. So Nico transferred to UCLA and was eligible immediately.
Right.
But Nico could not transfer within the conference. So it was a conference penalty or a conference policy. Is it in like the same realm of motivational policy? Like, could it change your behavior?
I mean, there is also the question that we've kept bringing up. Does a court ruling supersede policy, driven by a conference?
I think that's the first question they're going to try to figure out is, even if the court says that you cannot prevent them from playing, can our league policy say...
You can play, just not here.
Or something along the lines of, we're not preventing him... Yeah, kind of the same thing. Like, we're not preventing the student athlete from participating, but he's not eligible to participate in our league. But also Then it becomes the question of, does that violate the restraining order?
I mean, you could argue no. I mean, like we looked at last week, the Patriot League does this, and there's not been a challenge to that. I recognize it's the Patriot
Correct.
League, not the SEC. I get the difference there. But at the same time...
Well, I think the question would be, it's not necessarily... Forget, because you bring up a point of, this is a specific example of a league that says you cannot do this. I think the real question would be is there language in the restraining order?
Right.
Like, so no, like there was a Villanova player mm-hmm. that challenged it, but I don't know if he challenged, like, was there language that he could have gotten that even the Patriot League would have said that forces our hand? I think that's the real question is they're going to try to figure out if these restraining orders force their hand.
Hmm.
Or is there a way to self-govern?
Right. With your member institutions.
Correct.
I mean, that's what I'd be trying to figure out. So it makes sense to have these meetings. It makes sense for the SEC. Because there's an opportunity with this lack of true understanding of where we stand with everything on what should be and shouldn't be legally, that if you make your own rules, and try to put them in effect, you could at least have something to present when the time comes that something could come to bear. It's like this is it could maybe prevent laws from happening, or at least give you something to base things off of.
I also keep wondering this.
We got games this week, though, Jeffrey.
Well, like, Daquan is a good player.
Sure.
Yep. They also have Tre'Davious Walker.
A preseason All-American.
Correct. Like, is all of this, I mean, I guess at a certain point, it's like, anybody that can help will take. But it's like, I just keep wondering, like, at a certain point, it's like, is it all worth all of this?
Right, exactly. What expense are we doing here?
Like, what's the cost-benefit analysis?
Even to that point.
The time back in for this whole segment, right? Like, it's, like should, is it worth bugging?
Correct. Like,
the office, if you're going to get caught. He didn't get caught. There was just suspicion. But yeah, is this worth it? With the damage that you can do across the board, next time you're going to be on the other side of it, possibly.
I really
wonder.
It
happens again.
Well, I mean, there's also the question of by being this aggressive, that then motivates people to like start aggressively going after you.
Correct.
I wonder why the NFL didn't make a harsher decision on this.
So
I recognize that the NFL, like, they are separate institutions. I get that.
Yeah, but there is you're not the only person that's asked this. I think there is a belief amongst legal scholars that it is a position by the NFL that protects themselves by not getting involved.
Sure.
They don't open themselves up to
the complete hand up. We're not a part of this. We don't want to deal with it.
It's not our league. It's not our problem. Like, there's that. I think that there's the belief that it is a legal decision rather than it is a like moral or
sure.
standing up for what's right. Falls in line with what you would expect from the NFL.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not even necessarily thinking of it that way as much as it is. We have this player who has signed an NFL contract, a binding contract, unless he wants to go out of his way and terminate it.
And went to training camp.
The money
yeah.
back. Went to multiple training camps.
Yeah.
He was at more than one.
OTAs.
Right.
He's been a professional since April.
So, like, well, for one, he could probably make the Browns, if we're being honest. The only real tight end in front of us is Harold Fannin. But even beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. The reason why he wants to go is because he's getting paid more at LSU than he would get in the NFL.
Oh, 100%.
All right, so Jeff, let's wrap this up. Ed, like, should he play or will he play? Is he going to play for LSU?
Should he play? No. Will he play? My guess is yes.
All right, I'm kind of on the same boat on that. That's
yeah.
not great.
I mean,
radio,
he has a legit, like, I mean, Rosenhaus has been an NFL agent for what, 40 years, 30 something years? Like,
God, forever.
The fact that they're going through this, like, I don't think they would be going down this route if they thought this was, like, not going to happen.
They've like, got a judge in Baton Rouge is going to.
Well, it's just, I, Rosenhaus, like, that's a professional operation. I think if they even thought it was like coin flippy, mm-hmm. I don't think they pursue it this aggressively.
Right, but they feel like they've got a case, which is to push it this far.
Yeah, but like to me, like the
to make this move to get here, like stop us, try to stop us.
I just don't think it is that unreasonable to be like, you made the decision to go pro, you're a professional.
I know, but the gray area comes into the fact right. that they are getting paid, so you're kind of already a professional in college as well. So, like,
yeah,
it's like, what's the difference? One is you have to enroll in class, and the other one, you don't.
Well, the other one, though, is you become an employee of
sure
the NFL.
Right, but there's a gray area
but
in
being,
college
to me, being now. Being an employee of the NFL is different than getting paid by –
it's different.
Rev share, whatnot. Like,
it's different, and I agree with you, but it's different. But by how much? Like, there's not a really.
No,
true...
I mean, I feel like I've been arguing it's yeah. been professional sports for longer than anyone. But like, I do think you lose the right to play in this league when you make the decision to play in the NFL.
That's how it's been historically.
But to your point, this is where the lack of foresight, the lack of really the ability to come up with
a true universal understanding of the laws
or policy,
of the land.
Like, real,
right?
like enforceable policy.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.